Well, you've been planning for this concert for a long time. Lori, I remember the last time we talked, I was going gaga over your latest recording, which you could barely remember recording. It had been so long ago, and back in January, I imagine that in the back of your mind, you were actually thinking about this concert, Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto, coming up. I mean, that's
I have actually been, yeah, I've been thinking about that. It's one of these pieces that one has to psych oneself up for. So,
They made a movie about it.
yes, they did. I keep wondering if we haven't really. I think, weirdly, that movie is just past my students. I don't think that they were, around or watching movies like that at that time, but I always think I remember what a huge sensation it was at that very point.
Yes, and the name of the movie is
Shine. Isn't that what was isn't that
Escape.
what?
Shine, that sounds right. So it's
with a crazy Australian guy.
Right. It's a movie about the Rachmaninoff Third making someone go mad.
Yeah, or and then bringing him back.
That's
I
a
don't
great
I
premise.
wasn't really quite sure if I my take on that was that he was crazy to begin with. So
So it's not only legends like that, but the fact that Rachmaninoff was a peerless pianist to begin with that would take some psyching up to tackle the work.
Well, yeah, it is quite a different piece than the other. I do not play the fourth concerto, but I do play the second concerto, and I've looked through the first, and it is somehow just it's sort of really his pièce de résistance in terms of just putting everything together. I also think it's musically one of his most profound works. Take that however you would like. I don't think it's maybe quite as super popular and the melody's quite so
memorable.
easy to hear as in the second concerto. And yet I think the psychological underplan and the whole I think his musical voice is probably the most personal in this concerto. And then, yes, combined with that, he seems to have just outdone himself in providing a lot of technical, let's say, interest. It's just very textural. There's a lot going on, and there's not many breaks. The pianist is kind of always playing. And so, yeah, it's for me, it's a bit of a physical sort of, okay, I'm now training for, a marathon, and I have to kind of watch what I'm doing with my hands and make sure that I'm not picking too soon. And but it's fun. I mean, it definitely puts you in fantastic shape, so I love that.
We've got a lot of Rachmaninoff Third recordings here in the library. They're all quite different in the way that it pits the soloist against and with the orchestra. There's a Martha Argerich recording we have where she's basically being chased the whole time by it seems like by the orchestra, and it's quite a duality, I think, in this piece.
I guess a concerto in its true form.
Bruce. Since the kids kind of missed that pop culture moment in the 90s about this concerto being so terrifying and difficult, what did you prepare them with?
It is difficult for the orchestra, and but not in the way that you might expect. The orchestra is actually playing most of the time, except for Lori's cadenzas, but yet it's very strange in this way. It only has two prominent tutti's, and that they're both in the second movement. Past that, it's about four bars of tutti here and there, but because we're playing with Laurie all the time, they have to really know the piece, you see.
And it's very contrapuntal.
It's very contrapuntal.
Contrapuntal mixed meter. That's what makes it kind of hard.
As we said, as I've said many times to you, Kara, about Brahms, for example, his juxtaposition of the duple and triple rhythm, which for all composers historically has been the big challenge, what to do with the duple and triple. And Rachmaninoff certainly has his version. And this one is difficult for the orchestra, some of the juxtapositions of the duple and triple meters, and that's what makes it kind of difficult. Although not to the audience, I think the audience kind of enjoys listening to it, but it's difficult for the orchestra has to really keep up, and they have to know what she has. I have to know what she has, and they have to not sleep. It's one of those accompaniments that it's like, okay, it's secondary, but they still have to be right with her, or it's not together.
Yeah, it doesn't play itself, and it has to be put together with mindfulness in order to keep the whole
Yeah, he had very specific things in mind and very, you know, a specific thematic and motivic material, which I find fascinating. It's one of those pieces, interesting, because Laurie and I did the second piano concerto, you know, also years ago, and I love that piece, mm-hmm. of course. But I think as I studied this, it was one of those that, oh, I want to hear it again and again and again and again and again. Very interesting. Because with Rachmaninoff, you come to a saturation point sometimes. You say, okay, I've heard it enough. Mm-hmm. But this one is fascinating in that way. So I mm-hmm. think Laurie's right about he really, craft-wise, is superior to the second concerto. In fact, and that's why I don't understand why he always said the second concerto. Rachmaninoff said this. He thought the second concerto was more difficult than the third, and that's not what pianists say at all, mm-hmm. you know. So I don't know what to tell you. It's certainly not from an accompaniment standpoint. The second piano concerto is not harder than this. This is harder, I think. Mm-hmm. You know?
The concert is at 3:00 in Chenery Auditorium this Sunday. We hope, unless, you know, we're under 6 feet of snow or something like
hopefully
that.
Hopefully we will not.
But yes, it's planned for Sunday at 3:00 in Chenery Auditorium. Let's take a moment to listen to the opening of the Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto. And the pianist is Vladimir Ashkenazy with the Concertgebouw Orchestra. Right in the middle of this development on the Concerto No. 3 by Rachmaninoff. That's Vladimir Ashkenazy and the Concertgebouw Orchestra. And if you've just tuned in, I inelegantly faded out of that music because there's a live performance this Sunday at 3:00 featuring my guest Laurie Sims as soloist, conducted by Bruce Ujimura, who is leading the University Symphony Orchestra. And during the music, we've been talking about many things in regards to this concerto. You were saying that move. You said, you can fade out here. It's rather demonic.
Well, it just as all of a sudden it gets a little weird, dear. That's one of his weirder moments. I love it, but I mean, it gets kind of murky.
Yeah,
let's just say that.
And that's one of those passages that, you know, it sounds harmless. It's difficult to follow.
It is so murky from every standpoint. Everybody's just, it's like Armageddon. Everybody's sort of falling apart and running for the high hills. But at the same point, you have to join forces.
And we had a very beautiful, elegant passage that was a bit Mendelssohnian.
The second theme, right? Song Without Words, we made that analogy.
Yeah. I was calling to mind the Violin Concerto, the famous one by Mendelssohn, because it has that sort of four-bar pattern to start, and it does kind of the same thing in this concerto.
And a longing melody. Mm-hmm. It does. Well, yeah, I was saying also that Rachmaninoff, one of his big idols was Mendelssohn, and this is the most, I think, unusual thing. People don't necessarily know that Schubert was one of his great...
idols.
Yes. Yeah. And so, which is... There's something about it that seems really contradictory to Rachmaninoff, but when you think about it, these great melodists and maybe that sense of melancholy that hovers in both of those composers' music, there's something to it.
Mm-hmm. He was also very versed, and I in my research I read a little bit that he had played with a baritone or something like that before mm-hmm. writing this piece, so he was very, very conscious of the voice. Human voice, mm-hmm. you know, even though he's a pianist and, well, mm-hmm. I shouldn't say that. Pianists are very conscious of the human voice too, but you know what I mean? You would think with all that flash mm-hmm. that he's, you know, but he really was very concerned with that.
Mm-hmm. I think of Schubert and Mendelssohn also as being well-read, at least the poetry affected them mm-hmm. greatly. And if you're working with a voice soloist, then you are also meditating on the meaning
words.
Of the words.
Right, yeah. The words, mm-hmm. exactly.
So you can really capture that romantic spirit.
I told you my story about phrasing and words, you know, so we're instrumentalists, so, you know, we don't have words. But, you know, I was having a student having trouble with phrasing something, and I said, why don't you put words to it? She did for her week of practicing, came back. It was terrific. The transition. And mm-hmm. I said, wow, you play that so beautifully now. And she said, I put words to it. Mm-hmm. And it works. Mm-hmm. You know, otherwise they don't have a real concept, you know, unless they're quite experienced, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and Rachmaninoff's songs are, I got to know these a little bit better when our colleague, Dr. Carl Ratner, played a recital or did a recital last year with a very, very accomplished Russian vocal accompanist. And the words were printed. And so I could finally, you know, sort of put also words to these kinds of melodies. And they're way over the top romantic, really sloppy kind of romantic. I love it. Sloppy in I love it kind of way. Romantic Russian poetry, you know, about love and why are you leaving me? And there's always a little bit of larger tendency towards maybe cruelty, maybe even violence than you would find in German poetry, which is, I don't know, it's attractive. It's raw. It's a lot rawer. So.
But the language, right? The Russian language. Very interesting when set to music.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could put words to so many notes here, Laurie. I really have to address the the note load you have.
Sure.
Well, yeah, you did. In all of that note load, you really have to relegate it underneath a much, 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 much bigger umbrella of melody. And that's kind of one of the fun things about this concerto, that is I might have only accompaniment, but as I'm actually practicing, I always sing the orchestra part as I'm playing so that I'm making sure to keep things in keep that phrasing in mind, and also, you know, bow length and air capacity and those kinds of things, because that has to come into play.
So when you open the score and you see lots and lots of notes, you know that some notes aren't as important as others, and that the overarching line is what has to come out.
Okay, now I know that. When I learned this piece, if you asked me to learn such a piece now, I'd say, yeah, I don't think so. Thank you. Just because it is a lot of notes. I learned this piece luckily at an age where I would still relish such an activity. But as you play it, you realize that, yeah, in fact, what you have to do there is not maybe primary, and also that it in a sense becomes technically much more manageable when you're not trying to fire out every note, when you realize that you're actually just part of a texture, and that this is, you know, kind of a mishmash of waves and curves, and not every single note is tremendously important.
Does the orchestra string section say, do they have to play in a more romantic swooping kind of style?
Are you asking
a certain amount of poetry from them?
At times, right. Certainly for the second movement, for example, tutti's and things like that. And then the brief times that they exhibit melody or some melodic fragment that goes with the piano line, you know. But it's interesting you mentioned that, because the soloist generally is concerned with detail and ensemble and things like that. So the minute I open a score, I want to see the relationship between particularly if it's a concerto, the juxtaposition of the soloist with the orchestra. And particularly with Rachmaninoff, how he deals with his textual issues, you know. Then there's the rhythmic, not complexity, I would say, but, you know, the piano, for example, has such an instantaneous sound. And so when Laurie plays a note, if the orchestra's not anticipating it, they will be behind, I almost guarantee it, mm-hmm. just because of the way the other instruments make, single line instruments make sound. You see, mm-hmm. There's a breath, there's a bow. In the case of the strings, there's a lot of bows. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big challenge. I always found, I remember the first time, I'm much better at it now, but first time I accompanied a pianist, I found that to be very difficult. So you talk about, you know, the old, you watching the YouTube video of the conductor and, you know, the music is not in sync because the conductor's like a bar ahead or something of the orchestra. That is, I have to do that particularly when I accompany piano, because the orchestra really needs to be ahead. Otherwise, we'll never be together.
Then that was one of my big learning curves, was to not arrive, you know, always early. You learn to sort of hold back your sound, and you start to try to have your arms be a little bit like the conductor's arms so that you're actually arriving. It's a
See how much experience teaches us?
Yeah.
But
that was truly from experience, because in the beginning it was just a nightmare.
Yeah. For example, in the end, Laurie's, you know, pounding away at some chords, duple and triple, or syncopated, while the orchestra is playing this huge, you know, stretched out melody, which mm-hmm. which Rachmaninoff intended for the orchestra to sustain like crazy. But she's going, and the orchestra's sustaining these long notes, ritardando and stuff like that. So she has to be really aware of what the orchestra's, how much the orchestra's stretching.
And I can say, at least for the first and second time, I was just miles ahead, missed that by a long, yeah, because you're way up there in that high region where the piano doesn't sustain. And so you, you know, you think, okay, I'll just move on. But that you kind of turn yourself over and just ride the wave. That's what I think of it. You yep. just kind of sit on top and plunk out your notes and let the orchestra fill out your sound, which is actually really fun.
Yeah, when that's you get exactly
there.
Right.
When you get there, yeah. it's really fun.
So if you learn to use the orchestra to your advantage, as a cellist, I wasn't like, nobody hears us, you know, in solos, then you're onto the right thing. Yep. You know, I mean, the total musical picture, you know, mm-hmm. is what I'm talking about. It's one of those standing ovation endings, I think, the way Rachmaninoff, if it's done right.
Always, yeah.
That's a great analogy. I can see your role as the sort of frothy, curling edge of the wave and mm-hmm. then the massive power of the
That's
orchestra.
Right. That's exactly right.
Pushing yeah. you. Ahead. Let's take a short break for music from the second movement. I again need to mention the concert is at 3:00 and it's free and open to the public, and it's in beautiful Chenery Auditorium. 3:00 Sunday afternoon. More information at the School of Music website, wmish.edu/music. And here is music from the second movement. Music of Rachmaninoff from the second movement. And I'm here with Laurie Sims, who is the soloist in this Sunday's performance at 3:00 with the University Symphony Orchestra, conducted by my other guest, Bruce Uchimura. And both of them friends for a long time on faculty at Western Michigan University. And it must be fun to cook up these projects together every so often.
It's a lot of fun to have such talented faculty to be able to do these great works really well. And so that's always fun for me. Very inspiring for the orchestra, by the way. They really look forward to playing with their
faculty. You don't have to look too
faculty,
far
you know.
For a top-notch soloist.
No, not at our school. But it's going to be a pleasure.
And this is obviously good for you as a pianist. I mean, it's anytime you get to play a concerto with an orchestra, it's a good thing to
It's always good
onto.
And it's always fun. And I do, I love to play with the university orchestra because the attitude is fantastic. I mean, the kids do get really excited and they play their hearts out, and often the performances end up being just super exciting and really hot. And I mean, and I would say, I've mentioned this to a lot of people that, you know, you go into the so-called, and I want to be careful about saying this, the quote-unquote, the professional orchestras. In other words, they're getting paid to do it, because I think the USO sounds every bit professional, but they're not necessarily getting paid for it. And you know, you're just like, oh, hi, how you doing? And they play the concerto and then you leave and there's just nothing doing. I mean, there's sometimes it's hard to really feel like you're making music with people and that they're as excited about it as you are. So this is actually really a pleasure. I mean, this is not just like a favor to me. This is actually something that really kind of feeds the soul and, you know, makes it a lot more fun to be able to do.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of students looking at their parts and thinking, wow, this is, I really need to nail this section or nail this solo part or make sure I'm with the ensemble and it's my one chance, and the stakes are higher.
Correct.
For a student.
But they really want to play well. That's the difference. Yeah. I mean, most of them are experiencing, certainly Laurie's piece, the Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto, for the first time.
Absolutely.
And so that makes it even more exciting because, you know, they, you know, have excited expectations, let's put it that way, you know, what's going to occur if they're prepared. So.
Laurie, you were complimenting Bruce on the way the orchestra sounds these last few years. It's been outstanding.
It has, the past 5 years.
You just never know. Somehow things kind of can just kind of gel, and maybe it's a combination of, I have no idea, but yeah, they've really been firing out some big programs, and I've just seen that this, you put together really big programs very quickly. So, Bruce was sort of like, oh, this first rehearsal, you know, and then the first rehearsal that we had was great.
Second one we did it years ago, you know.
Yeah.
The first rehearsal,
oh, right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they just, yeah, it was, you know, sometimes you look at them and they look like deer in the headlights. And this time everybody was just, you know, they were just right on, and we just were kind of walking through the thing, one problem after the next, not really being a problem. Mm-hmm.
And that piece can be problematic.
Yep.
This is a good time to segue into the next enormous work on the program, which is the Shostakovich Symphony No. 5. Bruce.
Correct.
Russian all the way.
Russian all the way. I think the last time I was looking at the old programs, that you played Rachmaninoff's second with us.
Oh, it was Shostakovich 5, because I remember this, yeah.
and the I'll tell you what, one of the reasons why I like all the Shostakovich symphonies, but 5 is, you know, kind of a pivotal piece, right, historically for Shostakovich, because it came after his horrible debut of his opera, right, Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk, and that was just awful. He was almost written off at that point, but this piece really brought him back. But it's so Shostakovich in the sarcasm, and you know the way he writes wolf in sheep's clothing, let's say, right, because it sounds so Russian and exalted and stuff, and it's really actually very sarcastic and twisted, actually, you know, and the kids love it.
So it is the orchestra most attractive piece, and it is so, you can't help but love this piece.
In fact, I was stunned, because the first rehearsal we read, and it was like pretty good, so obviously they were psyched for this performance.
I've seen a lot of young performers really take to Shostakovich.
Love it.
We've seen that at the Stolberg International String Competition, where the cellists are playing.
Always the first concerto, yeah.
Yeah.
And the violin concerto, which is terribly difficult, but they love that.
And they can do the biting kind of.
They can.
It's almost like, it's not, it's an adult version of, you know, being a young person and having to follow all these rules all the time.
That's a good
and you know, saying, I know what you're up to. I just have to suffer through this for a few more years and I get to be my own person. And
rebellion.
Shostakovich gives them a great outlet.
He's all about that, you know, and his music really, really has that. And I think the younger generation loves that, you know.
Well, let's listen to a little of the Shostakovich Symphony, first movement, Symphony No. 5. Just as things are picking up in that first movement, we are faded out of the Symphony No. 5 by Dmitri Shostakovich. Bruce Uchimura will be conducting that work, and that has the University Symphony Orchestra on display this Sunday at 3 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium. The concert, again, is free and open to the public, and more information is available at wmish.edu/music. And, you know, it's an incredible program. These pieces are very different in a way, and yet they suit each other.
Correct.
They come at different time periods, and this world war makes a difference in the sound and the attitude in music.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear that just a few years on from the Rachmaninoff.
Yeah. I should say one other thing, Kara, that I didn't tell you was on the program, and that's going to be the world premiere of a work written expressly for the University Symphony Orchestra by Valeria Jonard, who's the wife of Abdel Anzaldúa, both graduate students at Western that graduated last year, he on violin and she in composition. And she won the Ron Nelson Composition Award for Restful Music last year. which was judged by a panel, and we will premiere her piece called The Whale's Lethargy at this concert.
Oh my goodness, that is like, wow.
Yeah.
That's a major point, and it's 5 minutes to the end of the hour.
and the piece is short. It's only about 5 minutes, but it's a wonderfully beautiful acoustic piece. Valerio's music is really fascinating with her, the way she uses sound and instruments.
Just an absolutely bountiful program of the Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto, yeah, and this great Shostakovich Fifth Symphony and world premiere. And it's all in one package at 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon in Shenri Auditorium.
And it's all free.
You'll be working hard that day.
I'll be working hard, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Please come.
That's probably the greatest thanks you can give to a conductor.
I would say.
Shenri Auditorium, of course, is a treat to play in. And it's usually just one concert a year that the university orchestra takes the trip downtown.
Yeah. The acoustics are very different from Miller, so I like to break it up, you know, in their ongoing education of adjusting to the acoustics of the hall, you know, which is why we play in the venues Miller, Chenery, and our own recital hall. So.
And what's coming up for the University Symphony Orchestra?
Yes, so we have a Pops concert, as usual, in March, which my trusty graduate assistant Jeffrey Spenner and I are putting together the program. And finally, we'll have our concerto winners at the end of the year at our annual concerto concert. We don't know who that is going to be because the competition is going to be on the 10th. Also open to the public, 5:30, starting at 5:30 on Sunday, the February 10th.
And this is a very important year for the School of Music at Western. It's the 100th anniversary all season long. So if it's been a while since you attended a university symphony concert, this is a good time to go.
It's a good time.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
Thank you, Carol.